The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 285 for Wednesday, August 10th, 2011. My name is Jules Cisek. I'm here with Jim Race, and we're back after our little one-week break.
Which I think we both desperately needed.
Have you caught up on sleep yet?
Not even close, dude.
Yeah, I know. Well, we both Jim and I went straight back into work, and I know you had a huge job, and we had a huge job. We had a big launch and stuff like that. So that first week after Laguna basically doesn't even exist in my memory anymore.
That's funny you say that, because I can barely remember it either. But then on the other hand, I can barely remember last week. We've both been cranking away at our day jobs. And on top of that, I've been moving once again. You fans are probably kind of sick of hearing me say that. But hopefully this one will be permanent and I'll have some good, quick internet access. I have to give a big thank you to my buddy Matt Hilton up here, who has graciously provided me use of his office tonight to put the show together, because I'm in my new house with basically quite sparse, hardly anything there, and certainly no Ethernet or anything else. So he was really nicely let me borrow his office for the show tonight. So cool. Thanks, Matt.
Very cool. Very cool. So, unfortunately, we're going to start on a down note. This week we lost Gary Nixon to complications from a heart attack. Yep. Gary Nixon was he's known for a lot more than this, but he was a 1967, 1968 Grand National Champion in AMA. But for the most of us, we know him as just this guy who was always in the AMA paddock, and I think he's pretty much worked with like every rider that's currently competing in AMA. Kawasaki guy, so you know, one of your guys.
Absolutely, and sure, you're exactly right. A presence in the paddock up until his passing, and he will be sorely missed. A great dude, somebody that just kind of personified old school AMA racing, but as you said, his influence went far beyond that into the international ranks. So, Gary, and Godspeed, brother.
Yeah, very courageous man. I want to also give a big shout out to all the people that on Facebook, especially, who have given a huge, huge support to Gary's Nixon's family and stuff. Because again, it's a community thing. He was such a big part of it, and yeah, so big shout out to everybody who's been participating in that.
It was interesting watching the pretty much instant profusion of people changing their profile pictures, number 9.
Yes.
Which is Gary's historical number. I'm like, wow, that's an outpouring.
Yeah, it was huge. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, life goes on. Let's move on to listen to an email. We've had obviously a lot in the last few weeks, although thank you very much for actually not being too much too upset about the kind of sudden, "Oh, we're taking a week off" message on Facebook. We didn't receive a single email where somebody was like, "Hey, what the hell is going on?" You know, so that's cool. Appreciate that.
I think people understand that over time that this isn't our full time job.
Yeah,
and it's something that we strive and struggle to take care of. And when outside influences kind of dive in, it can be really difficult. And the bottom line is we want to make sure that we bring you guys a quality show and have the time to do it right. So thanks for your patience. And heck, you know, everybody else got a little mini vacation, so we thought we needed one too.
Yeah. In fact, those bastards are still on vacation. Anyway. we got some great listener feedback. The first one had quite a long conversation with between Martin, myself, and actually it went out onto, it spilled out to Twitter. Joe Kurinovich wrote in saying, "I can't recall a rider scoring points in the same year in three different series like Hopper has this year," which is MotoGP, World Superbikes, and obviously British Superbikes. Has it happened before? And so I think Martin may have asked this on Twitter, and yeah, and Dr. Martin Raines, who's the MotoGP official statistician, said that, oh yeah, actually Yukio Kagayama did the same thing in 2003. And we kind of left it at that, but then Martin pointed out that Joe actually was asking about points being scored.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's, you know, we dug around. I dug around in various websites, and Kagayama did actually score. He scored 4 points in MotoGP. And this is the interesting bit. So I was, you know, just looking at that race, the race results, and that was at Donington in 2003, racing for Suzuki. He was substituting for Kenny Jr., who was injured, and because of that, he was actually John Hopkins' teammate, which is kind of an interesting coincidence. He also scored 35 points as a wild card in World Superbikes, and he was seventh in BSB that year, scoring 214 points. So Yuki Kagayama, who we're actually going to mention a little later on in the show as well.
Indeed. That was a question that was actually on a lot of people's minds. And with Hopper coming up for yet another ride this weekend on another bike besides his primary one in BSB, very timely. So very cool.
Yep. Okay, this next one is from Alan Martel. He says, just wanted to ask what you guys think about the BMW and Kawasaki. This is World Superbikes. Regarding how they're wearing out their tires. Do you guys really think it's because of the electronics, suspension, or simply that their frames are just too stiff? He says, I personally think it's a chassis issue because of the fact that they suffer from a loss of side grip, which is a good point. Would electronics really be able to fix this? So what do you think?
Well, I think BMW is still in the teething process right now.
And we talked about their electronic thing. Obviously, they've got their own electronics, but Kawasaki works with Magneti Marelli, right?
Sure, but what you have to remember is that the Kawi is pretty much an all-new bike this year. And yes, they were chewing up tires in the past, but they also had some very serious handling issues that required the remake of the ZX10. And I think this year they're just trying to come to grips. Pun not intended.
Nice.
Really didn't mean to say that. But not only with the electronics, but with the chassis tuning. And we've seen flashes of brilliance from Tom Sykes. And I have a feeling as time goes on, as long as they stay in the series, it'd be interesting when they go to a one bike rule next year. Were we going to talk about that, by the way?
We can. There's so much going on right now. Bits of news. I think we can cover it all.
I'm going to need some sleep at some point this night. But
No. We're going to. I mean, not necessarily the show, but Alan also mentions, you know, that you know, the riders have to adapt to the different tires, and you know, talking to a ton of riders at Miller, everybody had. Either talking about the bumpy surface of Miller,
right?
But they were all talking about the tires and how they're, you know, most of the machines don't last, which actually is what I think everybody's kind of crediting the good racing to, because the last five or six laps for everybody is on, you know, completely gone tires. Right. Everybody's sliding around, and it's really rider versus rider, much more than machine versus machine, which is what we used to see in MotoGP.
True. You know, a lot of it, Jules, too, is the amount of money that some teams have to spend on their data systems. And that's just a fact of life.
Mm.
Not only the data systems, but the people to program them. And you know, that's a huge part right now. It's one of the reasons why people have a tendency to complain about electronics is because you can actually spend your way into a better finishing position for the most part if you've got all the rest of the package. But I am digressing.
No. Hang on, because it really comes down to Alan Martel was asking it. Well, you know, do we think it's chassis or electronics? In this particular case, I mean, it's there is no one thing, but I do think that there's been a lot of development going into the electronics to kind of get around certain problems that are introduced. You know, there's maybe chassis issues with a particular tire type, whatever. And electronics has been kind of the go-to for solutions. I mean, sure. If you talk about the MotoGP Ducati stuff that's going on right now, the craziness there, you know, that's the first thing they attacked was the electronics, hoping that they could fix their issues with electronics. So, because you don't need to manufacture a damn thing, it's programming. You know, it's like just changing parameters here and there. That's why it's the fastest thing you can with a good coder on in the garage. You can, you know, and it's all embedded code. You know, just send it down to the chip and run the damn thing, and you can change so much right there without having to manufacture new parts.
What it really needs is a good interpreter.
But, well, I mean, you and I know that the thing is that software development is not as easy as it sounds. I mean, it's very complicated, and it's very easy to introduce bugs. Which, you know, we've had this in MotoGP. We've had, you know, bikes that literally crashed as computers, not as motorcycles. You know, where they just died. Nobody could figure out what the hell happened. You know, because there was a buffer overrun. I don't know what the hell else they may be. I don't know what they're using. They're probably using like embedded Java, but whatever. Boy, are we now digressing. Sorry.
Funny.
Go ahead. Last one.
But the point being is, and you started on this path before you wandered off, is that it's not one factor. It's a combination of factors. And the fact that those two manufacturers that Elaine spoke of have relatively new platforms and is, you know, something that they're just dealing with. And on top of that, those probably best funded of teams. And so when you end up kind of with those varying factors in, it can be a little bit more difficult to actually try and maintain tire life to the end of the race. There's no doubt that both machines are putting down plenty of horsepower. That's not the problem. It's because they got power of the butt.
Definitely.
It's just a matter of getting the bike tuned to the rider's ability as well as to whatever tires Pirelli is handing over to them.
Yep. Does Kawasaki actually have a big budget?
I don't think so.
Oh, because you said those are the two most funded.
No, I'm saying the two probably not most well funded.
Oh, yeah, gotcha. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, absolutely.
And you've got Paul Bird Motorsports and BMW Italia.
Yeah, right.
And there's still a lot of money getting pumped in there, but they're not at the level of the top factory team, so.
Right. And we'll talk about the whole factory thing, too, later on. Obviously, it's been fucking huge news this week. Last one.
Okay. Nils Baker wrote in, hi, guys, given that BSB is now going to be sans traction control next year. Who fucking knew?
that's his.
What are the chances of the AMA adopting the same regulations and getting back to the transatlantic series match races? That's something I've been calling for years, Jules. Or at least getting back to those races. Maybe be badass. Given the likes of Hopper and Jake Zemke and BSB and occasionally Mark Miller, right?
Uh-huh.
How popular they've been, do you think the time is right? He said he was lucky enough to grow up about a mile from Brands Hatch, remembers the original series, fantastic atmosphere, given that Snetterden is pretty close to an awful lot of U.S. Air Force personnel. It could be quite a spectacle.
Those transatlantic races were freaking gold.
They were, and you can still go back and catch them on YouTube or wherever, man, and it's... I mean, yeah, the greatest of the greats. And the question being, okay, so let's drop back to his original question, because I know for a fact that at Laguna Seca, the gentleman that runs BSB was there, and he was talking to the AMA, whether or not that means that they're going to match regulations across the series, who knows. But the fact that they were having a discussion and they were talking about things like this, certainly cost cutting measures was probably a top shelf item right there on their agenda. But it's hard to say if they will, you know, Neil's question kind of hits on a bunch of levels. You know, you'd have to have, or hopefully have, the bikes relatively matched. And then people would have to figure out how to get the bikes across to the UK, which in itself is going to be a significant expense, especially based around the AMA schedule, which is pretty light these days. But would we love to see it happen? Absolutely. I'd love to see that. I'd love to go to one of those races. And I think there is enough interest between the two countries or more, frankly, where you could see something like that happening, and a little bit of friendly rivalry. Although I'm not sure I would want to go to the UK just now. Seems like they're having a little bit of a few issues over.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, that's another thing that I'm glad you brought that up, because aside from Japan, I think Britain is probably the second most involved nation in motorsports. And, you know, so our thoughts are always with them right now, because there's been some craziness going on with the riots, and that's been spreading, actually. It looks bad.
And very specifically, probably maybe our number one listenership is actually out of the UK. So
yeah,
all you folks out there that listen to Motopod, please be safe. I'm sure you're all responsible adults and probably taking care of business, and hopefully taking care of yourselves and your families. Just we're keeping an eye on what's going on, and our hearts and rides are with you guys. So be good. Take care.
Right on. Yeah, but this anyway, loss of traction control. So, you know, the reason why traction control is so despised is because, you know, it's blamed for a lot of, you know, costs and in certain series like MotoGP, it's also blamed for lack of interesting racing. I don't think that's really the case in BSB. I think that's more of a cost thing.
I feel a little
strange about it because production bikes now have traction control, so it's kind of weird that removing it would be a cost-cutting measure. I don't think it would actually add cost, so I don't think it's really a cost-cutting thing either. So what exactly is the reason to get rid of traction control in BSB?
Well, if you pull it back to a spec ECU and a stock wiring harness, or I'm sorry, maybe a spec wiring harness, you're actually, to some extent, but with some hazards, because the more you try and cut costs, the more people actually spend to try and get around cutting costs. those that actually have the money to spend. They hope for a level playing field and actually for, you know, more teams to be able to participate. As we know, BSB has gone to a one bike rule, although with some caveats. What I mean by that, folks, just to elaborate a little bit, is they have one fully built bike, much like Moto 2 and 125 GP this year. They do have a rolling chassis or enough bits to build up a new bike in the background, but not having two bikes to run concurrently actually does save money. All of the teams say that. Just to fill you in on that, because I know sometimes I just throw terms out and people are like, what the hell is he talking about? it's probably not a bad idea. Now, I remember when I talked to Mark about running the Split Lath Aprilia in BSB, the first race that he ran, or first two races he ran, I think. One, do you remember three races? I don't know. Or at least I know the first race he ran it in Evo trim, which meant no traction control. And the bike just it didn't have it. And so he actually ended up, and the Motec guy, I think it was Motec, Mark, apologies if I'm wrong, and I'm sure you'll tell me, had a chat with him. And they put it back to full superbike trim and ran the superbike class instead. Still had some issues, but that is what it is when you're changing things around. But the Evo, it seems like the Evo class has been fairly successful, so I think they're going to model it on that. People have an interest in saying that.
Hang on. You mentioned a very interesting thing. I mean, so Mark's riding the Aprilia, which is a motorcycle that didn't exist 4 years ago. It was a bike that was built with electronics. It's not like they slapped electronics on an existing, you know, evolution of a motorcycle. This motorcycle was built from the ground up, including the electronics, Which means you take the electronics away and it probably sucks, you know?
Well, and your point is well taken. I mean, the hardest thing to do is going to be to figure out how to provide parity between the different bikes, because you've got some bikes that are putting down, you know, in relatively stockish form, 200 horsepower. So some that are putting down significant. And to try and do that without, you know, something, the first year is probably going to be a little weird. It sounds like BSB is really paying attention and really focused on working with the teams. There was a great bit, but I believe a gentleman used to write into us a fair amount, Mike Edwards. I think he was with Miss Suzuki for a while. Could be wrong. In BSB. We should link to that, Jules. It was at Moto Matters. There was a guest column that he did talking about cost reductions, I think from last week sometime. And whenever you do something like this, the first year always seems to be a little bit odd. But like I said, I think BSB kind of gets it, and they really want the teams to be able to, the series is thriving right now.
I don't want to beat a dead horse. I just don't understand what is the problem with BSB. What are they trying to solve?
Cost? They want to make sure that it continues to thrive.
I know, but what has been the? Who's complaining about it? What what are they complaining about?
Well, I'm going to assume it's the teams and the fact that there ain't a whole lot of sponsor money floating around, dude.
Okay, but the thing is, if you take a bike if you take a BMW S1000RR off the factory floor without any modifications, it has traction control.
Sure.
So what are you going to do, turn it off?
No, spec ECUs.
Yeah, but they're actually getting rid of traction control.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying.
So the spec CPU is going to take away the thing that makes this S1000RR work. They're going to take away the thing that makes the RSV4 Aprilia work.
Well, you've got to remember, Jules, both of those are very modern designs.
Yeah, that's my whole point.
I mean, are they going to – and look at it this way. They haven't been kicking me right now, so they're going to have to figure out another way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, they're struggling. They're struggling to in BSB. They're struggling to do well in races anyway.
That's exactly my point. Yeah. Is the first year is going to be a bit of figuring things out. Teams are going to figure this stuff out anyway. You know, it's just a matter of an adaptation, and rules change all the time. Will this cause a big problem, or will it, somehow massively skew parity? Well, these teams aren't doing that well anyway, and maybe it'll kind of give them impetus to try and figure out stuff that, works in a more traditional manner, or a more old school manner, I should say, because tradition is electronics now, frankly.
Yeah, it is. Exactly.
All right,
enough of that. Yeah, exactly. Speaking of electronics, let's just move on to Laguna and let's talk about some full electronic bikes. Electrics.
Let's. We'll have a chat in a bit with Mark Miller because we talked about him, but we certainly were there for the electric race, and that was pretty cool. And I think the one thing, Mark Jules, that sticks out of my head that just blows me away was how much quicker they were this year than last year.
Amazing. I think 14 seconds, right?
12, I think, in qualifying or something like that. But, phenomenal difference.
Yeah. I mean, this is a short track. You got to remember that I'm not telling you. You know this. I'm just saying the listeners. you have to remember that this is a very short track where a lap on a MotoGP bike takes a minute and 20 seconds, which means that when you drop 12 seconds time, that's a huge percentage of the lap. It's massive. The bikes were, I think, clocking almost 160 miles an hour on the straight, which is close to MotoGP speeds.
And it was kind of one bike that we've been waiting for a few years now, that being the Mission Motors bike. piloted by Steve Rapp, who has written pretty much everything under the planet. Sort of a smoke and qualifying time, and backed that up in the race. And it was brilliant, brilliant.
It was great to see Mission, who, first of all, is like, you know, our local boys here, obviously.
Sure.
They're based in San Francisco. But also the fact that they were in there right from the very beginning. They were part of the TTXGP, the birth of TTXGP. They were very much tied to the TTXGP thing. They went out to the Isle of Man, and they failed because their batteries... I don't remember exactly what happened, but I know that they didn't even make a half a lap during qualifying, and they basically had to fold up. And now, you know, and then they kept appearing, disappearing, and they've been in the news, and they made it to Infineon, but they couldn't actually go out there this in May, and to work out all those gremlins and then just completely blow everybody away like that, that was so cool. So cool. And of course, you know, Steve Rapp, amazing rider. One of the things that was interesting in this race is that I think Michael Chish actually said this, right? He said that if there was a real racer on board his bike, it would have done better.
So yeah, during the E-Power / TTXGP race, I was hanging out in the hot pits with Mark Miller, and you could tell that he wanted to be on the bike. And as you mentioned before, you know, Michael had kind of quipped that having a real racer on there might have changed things. And you could see Mark really wanting to be out there. When Mark and I, or actually when I showed up on Thursday and I chatted with Michael, he hadn't known until earlier that week when I dropped him an email or Mark called or something like that, that Mark was going to be there. And so he was like, oh, I totally would have brought the second bike down, da da da. And I know that he told Mark that, but it was too late because that bike was off doing display duties or something like that.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
But, I didn't know that. That's crazy. Wow.
Yeah, and that would have been cool. Michael certainly did a credible job, I think.
Very. He had a great battle with Barney, Michael Barnes.
Again, for the second year. And nearly the same, the same ultimate outcome, pipping the Lightning team at the line, which I don't think went over very well with them, but Michael was certainly thrilled with the outcome on that. And in fact, Michael Barnes actually had a faster lap than Michael. But,
he did. Was it the same issue as last year? They basically started running out of juice and they had to back off?
Basically so. And I asked Michael.
They did an amazing. I mean, you know a lot more about this than I do, but didn't they do like a ridiculous amount of weight that they shaved off the Lightning since last year?
Well, they did. And they also basically dropped their battery pack down from the TT pack that they had this year down to a smaller pack. I mean, my hat's off to Richard Hatfield and that team. They do a fantastic job, and it was. Really fun watching that battle, but in the end, Michael Siz basically came around him on turn 11 and sprinted the line ahead. So your podium was Steve Rapp, Michael Siz, and Michael Barnes.
Nice, nice.
It was cool. You got to remember that there were actually a couple of different classes running here. This was kind of weird when I think this is the first time, correct me if I'm wrong, that TTXGP and the FIM E-Power class have come together.
Yeah, and actually, you know, we're not really supposed to call it the TTXGP. The FIM has specifically said this for that event, it was E-Power / TTX.
Oh, okay.
But we know what we're talking about. It's TTXGP.
Oh, I see. I get your point. Exactly. Yeah,
you know.
Okay.
We had to lose the G1s too.
We did too. Well, apparently they had to lose two letters. And so they were actually scored independently, which was odd.
Right, because they have a 7.5 watt thing, or well,
they were. So there was a 7.5 watt, and then the semi unlimited
kilowatt, anyway.
And then there was, but they also scored the TTX race independently from the FIM E-Power race, and not all teams were entered in the TTX GP. So it kind of it got confused. And finally, I just said I don't even want to try and figure it out.
Exactly. I'm like, you know what? The results are what you know what we saw. And I actually did. You know, what I forgot to mention was so I was photographing, you know, the entire weekend, and there was one point where I was during the first their first practice, the TTX ePower first practice, and I was hanging out at T2, which is, you know, down the hill, the first that very slow, well, it's not very slow, but a slow corner, the Andretti hairpin, and I was hanging out with the corner workers, and they're like, "Oh, here come the e-bikes," and they're all just joking around about how you know there's you can't hear them, and they go so damn slow, and blah 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 blah. And I was like, "You guys really should watch these guys because they're not that slow anymore. I mean, yeah, maybe last year they were slow, but just check them out this year because I think you're going to be surprised."
Yeah.
And you know, they. Because the bikes aren't loud, they don't seem as fast. But man, when Steve Rapp was going by, there were just, you know, there were a couple of people who had their jaws on the ground,
you know?
Because that bike was the way it accelerated out of two was unbelievable.
Yeah, I think this year was kind of a
wake
leap
up
in a bit of a wake up call. I remember the last couple of years, the GPT was kind of coming out and taking a look, but after the race. To see the GP there over by Parc Fermé, coming out and looking at him like kind of with a bit of newfound respect. So,
Actually, one of my favorite bits that you did when you were at the aisle was when McGuinness is like, "Yeah, I want one of those things."
Yeah. You know? Yeah. People are. You know, there's going to be people that say never, 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 and that's fine. I can understand the purist. But at the same time, I was saying never, 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 never to Moto 2, and now I'm kind of looking at that series going, gee, this is fun to watch. Things do change over the time. And will this take over completely? It will for a while, but there is going to come a point in the not-so-distant future where these bikes are actually competing and more than one or two head to head against gas engine bikes.
Well, let's face it. Steve Rapp would have qualified, in the middle of the field at the AMA Supersport race. Granted, there's no way he would have been able to finish the race because they ran more laps, but still.
Yeah, I mean, the times are competitive. They're quick, and it's clear with the rate of progression. And eventually, it's going to slow down as this rapid progression that they're doing. But at the same time, things are going to be getting lighter. Things are going to be getting less expensive, and you might see more bikes in the field. I think it's great. I'm looking forward to it. I'm carrying an open mind on it. All right, let's keep moving, man.
I did want to tell you one story of the ePower race that AJ Rosinski, who was doing a lot of the tire work for Tech Trois this weekend, and he's been on the show before, and he was obviously involved in the TTXGP series, so he knows a lot of the guys. So we went over to Tad Wolf's Moto Electra area on Saturday, I believe, morning. It was a Friday evening, yeah. And it turned out that they had burnt out their motor during practice. So they actually ended up sending the bike, the spec of the motor, because the motor was so destroyed that there was nothing really to send, but the spec of the motor to Sebastopol, which is about 4 hours from Laguna Seca north. It's past San Francisco, north of San Francisco. To some guy who, like, they found somebody sourced them saying he supposedly can make a really good electric motor. So they went up there and they didn't know, until later. And so they trucked it up there on Saturday morning, and on Saturday evening, they still haven't heard was the engine ready. The guy was like, do not bother me. I'm busy. I'm working on the damn thing. If I get done, I'll send it down. Otherwise, whatever. So he delivered because Ty was out there and he did okay, which is so cool. Because remember a bunch of years ago, the Primac team had a bad crash and they did a couple crashes and they ran out of tanks. Remember this?
I do remember.
And Liam's buddy, Brad Reynolds. Hey, Brad. Sourced somebody that was able to build a tank. I mean, I love that. You know, that's even in GPs, you know.
Indeed.
Very cool.
Indeed, very cool.
All right, sorry. I just wanted to put that little Tad story in there. He's a good guy.
Absolutely. Hey, before we roll into some of the new news here, we'll probably want to zip through that. Like I said, I'm starting to get really tired. Let's go ahead and run the bits with Mark Miller. Keep you guys entertained. It's always fun to have Mark on the show. And then we'll come back and talk about a few more current things. This is from Laguna. And we talk about all sorts of, it's a classic Jim Race and Mark Miller bit. We talk about...
with a lot more beer, though.
Well, yeah, we were face-to-face hanging out for the whole weekend. Since Mark wasn't racing, and I'm my own boss when I'm at the races, this is what happens. But enjoy, and we'll be back in a moment.
All right, so catching back up with Mark Miller. Currently, we've got the Red Bull Air show up. We've got the MotoGP guys are giving a rides around. You guys can probably hear it in the background. Just had a chat with Danny Eslick. We had a bit of a breather there, and just more with Mark. Looking forward to the MotoGP race. It should be fun.
Pigeons.
Dude. And we'll
just ask me if I'm looking forward to the MotoGP race.
How many questions do I get?
That was your question.
How many questions do I get?
You could have asked me so many things about my girlfriend and
you just spoke to Vero. Hi, Vero.
Yeah, I miss my girlfriend very much.
The plan for today is to pick up as much stuff as we can for you guys out there to also clearly enjoy ourselves. Jules is out shooting, as you guys have already seen, some fantastic photos here this weekend. Some amusing photos have been seen.
The one of you sticking your tongue out at my middle finger.
That was actually by Christine Sua. Hello, Christine. And actually a massive thanks to Christine because she's the one that sort of helped us take care of things last night. What are our plans for today, Mark, besides enjoying ourselves at this beautiful circuit?
Well, I know you're going to drink pints nonstop until we pass out. I'm going to try to go a tiny bit slower. If I go one every time you have three, I'll still be wasted by, like, in 4 hours. I know you're going to smoke two packs of cigarettes, so I'm going to try to smoke one. I'm looking forward to the MotoGP race. I want to see Spieth put that thing on the box, if not even better. I think Lorenzo's got the Yamaha working better, which is cool. Who else is in the race? Stoner's going to be quick on the Honda. Danny, the little midget guy, he's so cute. He's so adorable. You just want to hug him.
Like hug him like a snake hugs a rat?
No.
You got the huffs for Danny?
Oh, have you seen the video, all the videos that the girls make of that guy?
I know. It's sick.
Danny, you know, like all this stuff. No, I don't want to fuck a guy. But anyway, yeah, it's good. Beautiful. I think we'll probably have to work something out for next year and do something at this event. And, you know, I want to ride next year, something.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was clear that Michael wanted to have you here. In fact, I will note for you, Mark, in the post-race press conference for the ePower/TTX GP championship, Michael said on the podium, he said, next year, we're going to put a professional on. I believe he meant you.
Nice.
Pigeons again?
No, I hope so. It would be cool. I mean, I think they should enter two bikes next year, you know, and really, really do some drafting and do some... I was just thinking how fun it would have been to be out there and actually be behind Rap because he had such a lead, but it would be so fun to just dice with him because we're all training partners out at the Maley's Ranch with the steel shoes, XR200s, sliding sideways, and to be out there just him and I racing would be so fun for us.
You know, so fans out there of the show, I do have to tell you, and this is, I out Mark on just about everything, but I think you were more... Not only nervous, but kind of just anxious because you really wanted to be on a bike this weekend.
Only when I got here, I thought it would have been fun. But honestly, I mean, it's a decision that I made long ago to not do the AMA stuff. So this one race, so I've done before as a one-off, and it's such a cool track. It's a cool weather. It's cool fans. It's cool that there's the MotoGP, so all the curbs are painted, and the track is pristine. It brings in, like, you know, 50,000 people a day or something. So this one race would be awesome to do again.
And you've had a fair amount of success at this track, although you've been punted off a few times. You ever won a race here?
I don't think so. I almost did in 2000, and I think it was maybe it was 99. It started raining, and I got second. But I had the track record here in Formula Extreme 1 year, which actually the lap time, I was looking at the lap times in the Superbike warm-up. After about the first six guys, the lap times are a tiny bit similar to what we used to do on the big thousands. But, you know, obviously they're doing 25s now on the Superbikes, and they're DMG spec, and the GPs are doing 21 low, which is insanely fast. And somebody was telling me, Michael Sis was telling me, it was a cool story this morning. He went over to Pirelli to give him some tires for the e-bike, and the Pirelli guys had he had to go to Bridgestone because there aren't any Pirelli people here. So when Bridgestone got a hold of his race tire, the Pirelli tire, they almost fell over with how soft the carcass was and how it flexed and stuff. Then Michael picked up a Bridgestone GP tire, which is like a 16-inch probably, and it was as hard as a rock. Like, he said it was like steel.
Was it there super soft, do you know?
Well, I don't know. But the fact he couldn't flex it, he says, you cannot flex the tire. It's hard as a rock. So it reminds me of the old Qs that we used to have. They wouldn't work unless they were on the warmers for an hour or two warmers. Sometimes you put one on top of the other. And if it wasn't hot, you'd high side of the moon. But when they worked, it was insane when we had Qs. Anyway, kind of cool that the technology has changed so much.
So if there's one thing that you can actually, and this has been funny because I'm kind of here anonymously and incognito because of my new do, which some of you folks might have seen. You, however, Mark, cannot walk 5 feet in the paddock without getting stopped.
It's cool. It's nice to see so many old friends. I mean, I must know 200 people in this paddock, you know? And it's something, a lot of these people I grew up with from, my early 20s, you know, for many, many years. So it's been really, really cool. I mean, a lot of awesome memories and friends and faces. Everybody's getting older.
Duh. Pigeons.
No, what's weird is that we're all growing older, and every single person shows it, and we all kind of take a look at each other going, check you out, you know, how are you aging? Like, how are you aging, you know? It's really actually kind of cool.
I think probably your biggest surprise yesterday was getting flipped off in a very impromptu way by one James Randolph.
Yeah, Jimmy Jim. I haven't seen him in a long time, man. That was really, really special to see him shake his hand and get a hug and that kind of thing. And it's, you know, we were buddies back in the day. We did some traveling together and raced against each other a few times. He actually, as you know, 1 year I was leading the 750 Supersport race for Hypercycle.
Here
at Laguna, turn 5, he went underneath me and lost the front and took me out. And I high-sided to the moon, got knocked out cold, came up fighting with the corner marshals who were leaning on me on my knees and my fucking arms. And I was like, wanted to fight because I didn't know where I was. I was completely disoriented. And that was James Randolph and I's highest moment.
Well, didn't he kick your ass on a 250 at Loudon as well?
Oh, you know what? I blocked that out, and I told you that. I'd appreciate it if you didn't bring that up again. God damn you.
Yes.
He's about 7 foot tall and weighs twice as much as me, and he beat me to the line on a 250.
You actually had a discussion with him about weights yesterday because he looks like he's thin as a rail, and he's still racing his ass off on short circuits.
Yeah, he's doing the AFM stuff and winning, and that's really cool to see.
On a KTM.
Which can't be easy because those bikes are not necessarily going to work right. But he's good at setup, and he always has been, and a smart guy, and super funny, you know, and he pulls the ladies like nobody I know. Steve Rapp comes close, but James Randolph is the player of all players, and he always will be.
I'll note to you that Steve Rapp very specifically mentioned in the post-race or the post-QP conference yesterday for the electric bikes that he now has a fiance.
Really?
Really?
We'll see. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm sure he loves you, sweetie. I didn't mean anything.
And she is gorgeous. She's been around the AMA paddock for a couple of years now.
The whole paddock? How many did it take? Did you do Danny Eslick on the way up or what?
Pause. Oh, God. She just leave that. That is staying in. All right, so what we're looking at now is a bit of a lunch break. I think at some point You and I are going to have to go over to the LCR garage or the Michael Jordan garage and see how Ben is getting on and see what his preps are for getting MotoGP and Superbike in one day.
More importantly, what's with the purple hair? Dude, you look like a beetle. You look like fucking Ringo. I mean, what do you... You got this wave going across your forehead and stuff, and it was... Nobody recognizes you, because you used to have this Q-tip, which is what I would look like if I didn't dye it, but at least I have the brains to be like pick a color that would work, you know?
If you're going to be anonymous, you might as well be idiotically anonymous.
You look like a purple lollipop.
I would make a joke about licking it, but I'm not going to go there.
Terrible.
All right, obviously, thanks to Mark, and then we had a great time there, and it was cool for you to finally get the opportunity to meet him, and as well as all our fans that showed up at the meetup. So, goddamn, Laguna was fun. I had a great time. And
it seems so long ago.
It does. It seems like forever ago. We do have Brno coming up this weekend, which we'll see John Hopkins on the grid for Rizzo Suzuki, but there is a little bit of news going on, and Jules, I'll kind of touch on the points and you can fill me in a little bit. Debbie is chalking up his great run this year, and the question being is, what is it going to take for him to stay at HRC with the potential downgrading of the factory team to two bikes?
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's all year he's been kind of complaining that he doesn't have enough personality to really just kind of stand out, you know. Like he's the normal guy. He does have those goofy hats, but he's quietly doing the job. Unfortunately, with Pedrosa and Stoner there, I just don't see Dovi being able to compete with them, no matter how well he does. Even if he would happen to beat Pedrosa, it would only be because Pedrosa missed a bunch of races, you know.
Right.
In the end, I think that Repsol and HRC would never. I mean, Repsol would not let Pedrosa go for Dovizioso. It might be for somebody coming up. Might be somebody, you know, Spanish, young guy, maybe, Moto2 guy, whatever. But well, unfortunately, it's not going to be Dovizioso, I don't think.
That particular individual needs to finish a race season without crashing during races.
Yeah.
I think the next one is... I'm just going to quash this one, and I don't even want to bother talking about it. I think it's internet bullshit, but crazy rumors of Rossi going to Honda Gresini. Whatever. Yeah, just on that.
Well, episode. You know, it did light up Twitter for about 24 hours and eventually went to TwitGP. So, you know, you kind of get the score from that point.
Yeah, it's people got bored with the mid season break.
Right.
About the awesome article about the GP11 at Moto Matters, which I may have read, but I don't remember reading.
Oh, you would have remembered it. It's an excellent article that we're not going to bother going through it, but the main point, I'm not spoiling it, but the main point is that maybe people have been concentrating, you know, blaming the chassis, but what Ducati really used to do is look at the motor, and finally give up on the L. I like this. I like the article. Highly recommended. It's linked in the notes. It's a long read. Read it carefully because this is really, really good. I did want to mention one thing, though. I just do not see this mentioned enough, which is that the problem with the chassis, with the carbon fiber, is that it takes a long time to cure the frame. And when you have aluminum frames, yeah, you got to weld the damn things, but you can still turn that around in a week's time. There's just nothing. There's no way to do that with carbon. So yeah, you have those incredibly, you know, precise flex points that you can build using the fibers laying depending on how you lay the fibers of the carbon frame. But you don't get to test it for 3 weeks until it cures, right? So you have to like have all these different iterations of it and try each one, and you know you can't just go and fix it overnight. But what David's point is that it's actually less chassis and more the cylinder configuration, which is a signature Ducati thing, and maybe they need to look at changing that. And it's a great article on a lot of levels.
I think everybody should keep talking about it, and let's just focus on 2012.
Yeah,
It almost doesn't matter at this point if you think about it.
Well, it would be, I think that, yeah, I mean, of course. I just think that everybody is kind of, at this point, it would be nice to see Rossi on the podium again, I guess. I don't know.
Well, yeah, there's no doubt. Yeah, absolutely. I agree 100%. So I think we mentioned before, but Indianapolis Motor Speedway, which you're heading to shortly, Nikki Hayden got to have a ride. I believe that was on a like an 1198 or something like that. I think I forwarded you the press release on it.
Yeah,
but,
it was 1198.
And they asked him how what he thought of the road course surface, and Nikki said, and I won't even try and imitate his accent because. he said, the new surface is just what I expected, pretty much perfect. There are a couple of corners that the riders requested to be redone, and IMS went above and beyond. Actually, the whole infield from turn 5 to the finish is repaved. So he's looking forward to getting back there on the race bike, laying some rubber down and cleaning up the racing line and trying it up. That's in 2.5 weeks' time. That is ticking down rather rapidly.
Yeah, and that's good news for Casey Stoner, who was quite upset about the surface.
Well, he'll find something else to bitch about. oops, that was my out loud voice. Bridgestone had a bit of an announcement because we know we're going into Brno this coming weekend. And we've talked about this a bit. And if you remember from the last show, we talked to Tom Germain. We talked to Checanello. We talked to, I think I mentioned it with Livio Supo.
I think you mentioned the text actually with everybody because it really was coming out of the cold weather into the warmer weather of Mugello and then eventually Laguna, that's been the talking point. So, yeah.
It has been. And I kind of wanted to try and have the opportunity to segue from Laguna into what we're looking forward to at Brno, and I'll see if I can't get some feedback there as well. But things are changing a little bit. It's the first one in which the new tire supply regulations are coming into play. Riders are going to have the opportunity of softer compounds. Not necessarily tires that will make the race, but give them the chance to more safely, you know, run an FP1 and FP3 and say warm up to get an idea of what the track surface is like. You never know what's going to happen to Brno weather-wise, but we'll have to see. So the difference being this year, they're bringing softer rear slicks. They're also asymmetric for the first time, which is the first time at Brno we've had in the single tire era. Every rider is now going to have a choice of 3 compounds of front slicks, with additional soft compound being, you know, available for low ambient track temperatures, early mornings, et cetera, et cetera. Each rider is going to have a choice of rear slick compounds, but instead of being 5 tires of each, the 2 available, they'll have a choice after FP2, and this is key, of whether they want 6 of the softer and 4 of the harder, or vice versa, or 5 of each. So it gives them more opportunity to kind of figure out what they want to do. At the same time, Jules, as we were mentioning before we talked on the call, it also gives them the opportunity for teams to screw it up.
Yeah. This reminds me, didn't we used to have like a Thursday rule?
We did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you remember way back, as soon as we went to Spectire, I'm like, oh, they should give them the chance after FP2 to actually make their selection then. It makes sense, right? Because
yeah,
they've actually got an idea what the track's going to be like.
Yeah, I remember you talk about that. Yep.
Clearly, Bridgestone has listened to me, and I appreciate that. it'll be yet another thing to watch for the coming weekend.
And especially because the weather is going to screw them up because it's supposed to be cold, rainy, and then a warm race day. That's what it's looking like right now.
I hope they brought lots of softs then.
Yep. But it's gonna be hard to choose, you know, what do you want to keep running with, you know?
It will be.
Yeah, but that's good. I mean, I think all the riders were asking, especially what they were asking to have a little bit more choice, right? Because the bikes have been basically adapting to the tires the entire season, you know.
And yeah, we're gonna have Bridgestone around for a while, so it's nice to see that they're actually adapting through 2013, 2014, something like that. So
yeah, 3 more years.
We did have while we were off, a World Superbike race, and we won't go into that a whole lot of detail because it's been a week and a half back, but
in fact, I don't remember it anymore. It wasn't that.
I don't either.
You know,
I totally don't. Let's just talk about podiums. I can't even remember, you know, notable events, which I feel kind of bad about. But for race one at Silverstone, for World Superbike, we had Checa, Laverty, and Melandri.
And for race two, we had
Checa, Laverty, and Melandri.
Exactly.
You should have just replayed first. Well, it was close enough. A brilliant result for the Yamaha team, and they were quite pleased. But obviously for Carlos Checa as well, and the pseudo factory Altea Ducati team.
And it was a really bad weekend for Biaggi.
It was.
Who should have done better? I mean, the Aprilia was really should do much better than this at a track like Silverstone.
But he is still in second position in the standings, although he's got Marco Melandri creeping up on him, only 9 points down. So you got Carlos Checa with 343, and that's a fairly commanding lead right now, but things can still change. Biaggi with 281, Melandri with 272, Eugene Laverty with 208, and Leon Haslam down there on the BMW in 158.
And the thing is that two race weekends ago, Checa and Biaggi were less like 20 points apart. So mm-hmm. another 62 points apart. So
well, there's plenty that can happen, and the season is nowhere near done at this point.
Well, there's only three rounds left.
Well, there's six races, dude.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be tough for anybody to catch Carlos now.
Indeed.
But it's like you said, it should be a really good battle between the Biaggi and Melandri.
There should be. And well, you know how much those two love each other.
Exactly.
Could get ugly. Could get a bit ugly.
Or wonderful.
Yes, 10 wins now for Checa this year. Brilliant. Go old, dude. Then the one thing
that to mention something. We forgot to mention that.
I'm about to do it.
What?
The one thing that with Yamaha doing so well. And then
not that.
Well, I think it's
who was on pole.
Go ahead.
Hopper was on pole.
Oh, that whole thing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I wanted to mention. I mean, John Hopkins, you know, comes over from BSB. Obviously, he's, Silverstone is a BSB track, but they haven't gone there yet, right?
He's had some track time there. Well, but
he hasn't raced there with BSB guys. Comes over with the Suzuki, gets pole, and he did well in the races too. He was fifth in the first one and seventh in the second.
Yep,
great job by Hopper.
Yeah, definitely, and that's the kind of thing that will hang on to your confidence going into Brno when he's running as a teammate with Alvaro Bautista this coming weekend.
Yeah,
it kind of ties into the first listener feedback email that we had.
Yep.
But okay, so back to Yamaha.
They did great. And they chose that to
announce that they were pulling out of World Superbike now. A lot of people kind of thought about this right off the bat, freaking out. And I'm like, well, Ducati pulled out too, and they're leading the championship. Yamaha pulled out of World Supersport, and they're currently leading the championship. You don't necessarily have to have that quote-unquote factory presence there. Bikes aren't really going anywhere. Maybe they'll get put away for a year. Who knows? But things happen like this in World Superbike. Factories come in, factories go out, and it's not that uncommon to see that happen. So I wouldn't get all excited. I think we'll definitely see Yamaha's up there at the front next year. Just perhaps not, you know, in the factory Yamaha colors.
Yeah, I mean, I think what strikes is that, 2 years ago, Ducati was well, I mean, they didn't, but they were close to winning the championship. And then the year after that, they tanked. So it kind of felt like, okay, well, they were already sucking, and you know they didn't want to sink any more money into it. But as we know later, Xerox was totally willing to foot the bill.
Right.
But Ducati didn't want to go with it. So obviously it's not just money. There's other reasons. They wanted, it's a concentration thing. You know, money is definitely a huge part of it. But what some of the commentary on this has been that's really interested me is. World Superbikes started not as a series of factories competing, but of really a privateer teams on production bikes, right? That was the whole point of World Superbike. So maybe factories leaving World Superbikes is actually a really good thing, because we could have, can you imagine a world championship without, you know, official factory support?
That would be awesome. Factories have left World Superbike before and come back.
Yeah.
That's how it's going to be.
But I'm saying, like, you know, there's rumors of Suzuki going out, which, you know, I mean, they kind of, in my opinion, went out like 3 years ago, or 2 years ago. But you know, then we're just basically left with BMW and Aprilia and Kawasaki. And I don't know how long Kawasaki would last if that came to be. Honda does kind of seem like they're going to stay, because they were talking about their plans for the CBR 1000RR and Superbikes next year. But anyway, yeah. So yeah, it's not. I don't think people freaked out about it when it came. Then the bombshell came out. But like you say, they come and go. And actually, I really do think that an all privateer series, if that could ever happen, it would be so damn cool at the world level with those level riders.
Neat, I think it would be as well.
Yeah.
All right.
Supersport, Davies won, and now he's leading by 42 points, which is massive in Supersport because that's only 3 races left. I did want to talk about Suzuka.
Suzuka, the 34th running, was on July 31st, just a few days ago. Classic racing. It's unfortunate, Jules, we don't really get to see this here in the States, and I haven't had the opportunity to see it through other means, but
we watched it. In fact, I watched a ridiculous amount of it. I think I watched 6 hours straight.
Okay.
I watched the very beginning of it, and then it was not okay. It was on Justin TV, and a bunch of listeners jumped in on the channel as well. We had Jamie McVeigh, we had Edwin Hazer, AJ Rosensky, and a bunch of other people who didn't really introduce themselves, but I knew that they were Motopod listeners because they were talking about Motopod type stuff. And then a bunch of people who were apparently just as guests, and they can't be in the chat room. But yeah, we watched it for like 6 hours together and chatting about it, because it was an amazing race, actually. Think about this. After 4 hours, the top 3 teams were within like 4 seconds of each other.
Yep.
You know, and they were still swapping leads. And I think that Kosuke Akiyoshi, who was, I believe, wasn't that the guy who wild-carded for Rossi when he broke his leg on Yamaha?
I believe that's correct, but don't hold me to it.
I mean, the amazing thing about Suzuka, first of all, is that it's probably, with the exception of MotoGP, the most important race for the Japanese manufacturers, right? Although they are non-Japanese, like we had BMW this year.
Yeah.
And BMW is actually leading the endurance thing. But anyway, but Suzuka, historically, for the riders, for the and for the manufacturers, is unbelievably important. It's huge prestige there in Japan for the Japanese factories. And so a lot of the names that you hear are like, wow. Like, you know, the team that won, FCC Honda, was Kazuki Akiyoshi, who was brilliant, because they were probably, you know, a couple minutes down on the lead, and he made it up during one of his stints. Shinichi Ito, he wasn't on the bike that much, but he's, you know, a well-known rider from in GPs and superbikes. And Ryuichi Kayanari, who, this was the, because they won, this is his 4th win of the Suzuka.
Yep.
And he's what? He's still like in his mid-20s, you know?
I'm not sure exactly how old he is, but then he turned around right away and got back to BSB and raced there again.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. I mean, it was 35 degrees Celsius out there. You know, they're out there for 8 hours. Brutal. The second place team was Kageyama, who we mentioned before. You know, obviously we were talking about he's the guy like Hopper who scored in MotoGP, BSB, World Superbikes the same year. John Waters from Australia, and Nabuatsu Aoki, another name that everybody's heard, I'm sure. The owner of Suzuki. And in third place was Takahashi, not related to the other Takahashi that we know, Makoto Tamada, and Tada Okada, which is another writer. I think he's like a couple months older than me, so that's yeah. I like that. Also on the Honda. The other notables in the race were the Honda TT legends of John McGuinness, Keith Amore, and Cameron Donald. Unfortunately, they retired on lap 53. And this is the official explanation. They had an issue with the endurance-specific Pentagon rear-wheel drive system. And it was actually considered to be a danger to the riders. So the team decided to pull out because it was getting dangerous. I don't know what that means. Was it going to collapse?
I'm assuming it's probably something to do with a quick change push drive system, most likely.
Oh, I see what you. Yeah. Gotcha. Yep. All right. Yeah, because they're doing obviously tire changes, pit stops, and stuff like that.
Yep.
So they would know. Okay, got it. And then the other team. This was heartbreaking. Was the Honda Dream Team with Wayne Maxwell, Jimmy Stauffer, both Aussies. Just two guys on the team, which means they each had to do 4 hours. And they made it to the last hour, just barely into the last hour. And what was extra painful was that Wayne's girlfriend was on the Justin TV chat room. And she was like passing information back and forth.
Yeah.
And then they had this issue that they pulled over. Then they got back. They were running in fourth for a long, long, long time. And I believe it was Maxwell that had to pull over. They actually managed to get the bike back into the pits. They thought they had it fixed. They were pulling out of the pits and realized that the problem had not gone away and they had to retire, which is painful when you've been on the bike for 7 hours and you can start seeing the end. One of the things that really struck me about the Suzuka 8 hours. This is the first time I've actually watched it long enough to start appreciating the level of fitness these guys have and the fact that they really do continue riding at an incredibly high speed, pushing it. I mean, everybody's familiar with Kiyonari's style, you know, sliding around. He was doing that for hours.
Yep,
for
absolutely
freaking hours, you know. And when you get to that last hour, right, and you know the commentators are starting to get excited, and the teams are starting to get excited, the fans are starting to get excited. Think about this: that's when most MotoGP races don't even start. You know, like
four, exactly.
You know,
yep.
They still have an entire race to go. You know, it's amazing, totally amazing. So
it is amazing.
It was a great experience, and I really liked the fact that we got to share it with other Motopod listeners. It was very impromptu. And I hope that we can do something like that again.
Yeah, I remember waking up and finally getting to my email and going, oh, sounds like they had a party, so good on you guys.
Yeah, good stuff.
You asked me a question here, and I'm actually going to save this for next week, which is talking about the change as the BSB season goes on to the sort of showdown phase.
Cool.
I don't want to do it a disservice. I understand it to some degree, but I want to make sure that we can explain it all to the folks out there, and I don't want to explain it to Brits that actually know it way better than I do and screw it up.
Got it. All right.
So
We are done. We are done.
I think so too, and this is a good thing because I need to get some beauty sleep because I've got a big long day tomorrow.
How's the hair, Jim?
Huh?
How's the hair?
Everyone
wants to know.
Getting it touched up tomorrow night.
Nice. Nice, man.
The roots are growing back in, and you know I got to keep the popsicle head. So,
awesome, man! All right, well, thank you very much for listening. We're gonna stick that URL you mentioned earlier into the show notes, along with a link to the photos I took of Logistic. I finally got them done two weekends ago. So they've been out on Flickr. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week with Brno coverage. Excellent. I was just going to ask you to do that. Thanks. All right. Ciao, everybody.
Later.